This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 27th, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 105. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. Headlines from around the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature. Pondering the federal election results with pollster Mario Canseco of Research Co. A look back at Justin Trudeau's last pre-election bozo eruption. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or did Canada achieve nothing in the 43rd federal election? Justin Trudeau remains Prime Minister. Andrew Scheer remains leader of the opposition. The Liberals did lose their majority, and they lost a million votes nationally. The Conservatives won the popular vote, but that, along with a cup of Tim Hortons coffee, is just a cup of Tim Hortons coffee. Jagmeet Singh's NDP lost seats, but will get more attention from the Liberals. Liberals will need the NDP's help to pass some bills, but Trudeau has already said the Liberals will not enter a formal alliance with anyone. The Bloc Québécois are now a force, with 32 seats. Quebec nationalism is going back to Ottawa. Now there is talk of Alberta and Saskatchewan wanting a new deal or else. Premiers Kenney and Moe really want the Trans Mountain Pipeline, and Trudeau says it'll go forward. Meanwhile, the Green Party went from 2 seats to 3. In an election that included climate change as a major issue, how did Elizabeth May miss that opportunity? The People's Party was an even bigger flop as leader Maxime Bernier lost his seat. A handful of ridings may have gone Liberal because of vote splitting with the Conservatives. So every party and every leader is a bit weaker, but Justin Trudeau still has full control over the Prime Minister's office, and that's all that matters to him. The wild card? Jody Wilson-Raybould. The former Attorney General kicked out of the Liberal Party because of the SNC-Lavalin scandal on Justin Trudeau's shoulders, kept her seat in Vancouver-Granville as an independent. Jody Wilson-Raybould vowed to carry on her campaign for doing politics differently, across party lines. She will not be satisfied as just a face in the crowd. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the South China Morning Post, Kathleen Magramo, Martin Choi, and Karen Zhang report, Hong Kongers turn their morning commutes into protest marches with Walk to Work event across districts. The first ever Walk to Work event encouraged people to march together to their places of work from 8 a.m. starting at 8 MTR stations including Causeway Bay, Taikoo, Kowloon Bay, and Tsim Sha Tsui. About 50 office workers first gathered at Sogo in Causeway Bay at the appointed time, while others joined en route to Taikoo Place, about 4 kilometers away. Attendance at the 90-minute rally reached a peak of about 300 people. Hong Kong is in its 20th week of anti-government unrest, sparked by opposition to a now-withdrawn extradition bill that would have allowed fugitive transfers to jurisdictions the city does not have a formal exchange agreement with, including mainland China. The movement has grown to take aim at a wider list of grievances, including anger at the police's responses to earlier unrest. In the Japan Times, Kyoto reports, despite warming ties, 85% of Japanese hold unfavorable view of China, says survey. The survey, conducted by the Japanese nonprofit think tank Genron NPO and the China International Publishing Group, found that Japan respondents who have an unfavorable impression of China accounted for 84.7%, down just 1.6% from a year earlier. There was a noticeable rise in those who cited China's one-party rule of the Communist Party and entrenched nationalism of the Chinese people as a reason for their unfavorable impression of China, amounting to 43% and 8.3% of respondents, respectively. In contrast, favorable Chinese public impressions of Japan were at their highest level since the joint survey began in 2005. Chinese respondents of that view rose to 45.9%, nearly 40% higher than in 2013 when the two governments came to heads over the Senkaku Islands, administered by Japan but claimed by China, and impressions sharply declined. In the New Zealand Herald, the feature, shit, someone's left a blowtorch on, inside the Sky City Inferno. The fire began at lunchtime on a Tuesday, and by home time, Auckland was at a standstill. Traffic ground to a halt. Businesses shut. The public was warned to stay away. Smoke poured from the fire, consuming the roof of the New Zealand International Convention Center, a Sky City project already beset with controversy and delays, and now facing its biggest hurdle yet, a rebuild. Kirsty Johnston reports on the fire that would not go out. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines from around the Pacific Northwest. Jayati Ramakrishnan reports in the Oregonian, the clock winds down. Patrons of Portland's only 24-hour coffee shop mourn its impending closure. The coffee shop at the corner of Southeast Powell Boulevard in 13th Place will close its doors after Saturday night, shuttering the only round-the-clock coffee shop in the Portland metro area. Owner Casey Birch, who opened the shop in 2009, said the store hadn't had a lease in 6 years. Inspections for a potential buyer turned up more structural problems with the building than she'd realized. Hundreds of customers stopped by the shop during the last week to have a final cup of coffee, but some lingered, as they've done for the 10 years the business has been open. Corey Sidaway of Czech News reports, booze on board. BC Ferries launches pilot program selling beer and wine. A one-year trial program to add beer and wine to BC Ferries Pacific Buffet has kicked off. Quote, I think it's very civilized to have a glass of wine with a meal. Everybody is happy, said ferry passenger Doug Franklin, who shared the first glass of wine ever sold to the Swanson-Swartz Bay route with his wife. After about 60 years of prohibition on BC Ferries' busiest routes, drinks on deck was a dream for many commuters that was put on ice. BC Ferries already offers beer and wine for sale on northern routes sailing to and from Port Hardy, Prince Rupert, Haida Gwaii, and Central Coast ports they serve. This is the first time beer and wine will be offered on select sailings linking Vancouver and Victoria. This week in the Breaker.News, these headlines. Money laundering whistleblower says BCLC CEO's denial is dubious. U.S. prosecutors say son of David Sidhu falsely claimed to be a victim of L.A. gangsters. And venue for a controversial 2016 Trudeau fundraiser has become a crime scene in 2019. Read the stories behind these headlines, including full coverage of the scandal at the legislature. Go to thebreaker.news. Canada's 43rd federal election was October 21st. This is what it sounded like when the leaders of the main five parties began their speeches to their supporters. Maxime Bernier of the People's Party of Canada.
Merci, merci.
Thank you, thank you. I had the great privilege of being the member for both for 13 years, the privilege of defending the interests of the people of both, defending their values, was a real privilege. It has always been the primary reason for my presence in politics. And today, the people of Beauce have decided to give someone else their confidence. I accept with humility and congratulate Mr. Lehoux, the new member for Beauce.
Yves François Blanchette of the Bloc Québécois.
Mes amis, je nous trouve très fringants.
You look in good shape. We are very much alive. And the more I look at you, and the more I think that you look very young. So it's been a long journey, but we'll go even further.
Jagmeet Singh of the NDP.
Thank you very much, my friends. Thank you so much. Oh, man, the love is real. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the love. Merci infiniment pour votre présence, votre implication. C'est vraiment un honneur d'être ici parmi vous. Merci pour tout ce que vous avez fait. Merci. My friends, before I go any further, I want to acknowledge the traditional territories that we're gathered upon. the unceded Coast Salish territories of the Squamish, the Tsleil-Waututh, the Musqueam, the Kwik'kaek'un, the First Nations. My friends, this has been an incredible night. It's been an incredible campaign, an incredible journey, and it is such an amazing honor to be home here in British Columbia with all of you.
Elizabeth May of the Green Party.
Thank you. Merci. It's been a while since Brianna Bear stood on this ground to recognize that we're on traditional unceded territory of the Esquimalt, Songhees, and Wissanic Coast Salish peoples. And again, I raise my hands to the traditional peoples of this territory and thank you. Haishka Siam. The good news is Andrew Scheer owes me $50. We made a small wager at the end of the English language debate in which I suggested that he wasn't going to be prime minister. That turned out to be prescient. But congratulations to the leaders of the other parties on their results. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau remains Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. Mr. Scheer remains the leader of the official opposition. The New Democrats lost a lot of seats, but they're now the fourth party, and the big winner tonight was really the Greens and the Bloc Québécois. Well, we have more than doubled our popular vote, and we tripled our seat count.
Andrew Scheer of the Conservative Party.
Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you very much for that very warm welcome. It is always so great to be back in Saskatchewan. Now, first and foremost, I want to thank the voters of Regina Capel for once again electing me as your Member of Parliament. And thank you to all the volunteers that worked hard in the campaign office.
Justin Trudeau of the Liberal Party.
Merci. Merci, mes amis. Thank you, my friends. Merci, Montréal. Quelle soirée incroyable. Thank you all, my friends. From coast to coast to coast, tonight, Canadians rejected division and negativity. They rejected cuts and austerity, and they voted in favor of a progressive agenda and strong action on climate change. I have heard you, my friends. You are sending our Liberal team back to work, back to Ottawa with a clear mandate. We will make life more affordable. We will continue to fight climate change. We will get guns off our streets, and we will keep investing in Canadians.
This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The 43rd general election in Canada is over, and it's time for the navel-gazing and belly-aching from all corners of the country after a divisive election, an election where issues weren't debated very often. It was 40 days, but it sometimes felt like 140 days. Certainly was fought in 140 characters sometimes, and certainly the characters were characters, and their character was under scrutiny, but not enough about the issues. The day before the election, Mario Canseco of Research Coal released a poll that said the Liberals and Conservatives were in a statistical tie, and that was interesting how that all shook out, because the Liberals are going back with a minority government, but the Conservatives won the popular vote. So the country seems quite split. Justin Trudeau is getting a second term as Prime Minister, albeit with a minority government. Mario, can he make this last more than a year or two, especially after, in his first post-election news conference, saying that he would not cut any deals of any sort to create a coalition? He still wants to have the Liberals in power and hope that others toe the line, even though he said he would talk to the leaders of other parties and ask them for their input.
Well, it's an interesting dilemma for them because they are trying to do this the Scandinavian way. You know, I'll get some of the parties to vote for me on some issues that they care about, and I'll get some of the other parties to support me on things that the major party may not care about, which is the way it's been done in Denmark, in Sweden. I think it's a difficult situation, particularly because of the animosity that we've seen coming out of specific Western provinces, particularly in Alberta and in Saskatchewan. And also the fact that the Bloc almost tied the Liberals when it came to the actual popular vote in Quebec. So it's a tough undertaking. I think it's reasonable for them to try to govern on a case-by-case basis. It's similar to the situation that Stephen Harper did. I just keep thinking that if they had received fewer votes and maybe dropped 7 or 10 seats from the total that they had on election night, then maybe they would have struck a deal. But they are confident that they can make this work by going on a case-by-case basis. But yeah, I think the main difficulty for them is if they try to please everybody, they run the risk at essentially getting Canadians to say that they're not doing anything to advance the causes that they voted for. So it'll be interesting to watch how the first 3-4 months of this government unfold and the type of reaction that most Canadians have about it.
Yeah, that's right. With the Trudeau Liberals, they've tried to own the centre. Chameleons, sometimes when it serves their purpose, they go a little bit left. Sometimes when it serves their purpose, they go a little bit right. They did their best and worst in their first term to anger people that they tried to please and try to please people that they angered. It didn't always work, but it got them through and into the second term. Meanwhile, Conservative leader Andrew Scheer and his party, they missed a golden opportunity to defeat the Liberals. The Liberals were beaten and bruised by the blackface scandal, the SNC-Lavalin scandal, broken promises for a balanced budget, broken promises for electoral reform, and of course, the purchase of the Trans Mountain Pipeline, which angered voters who are for climate change, and it angered voters who are not for subsidies and buying private industry and nationalizing private industry. They did a lot of damage, but the Conservatives missed a chance to actually give them the knockout punch and win.
Well, I think the key here is a lack of emotional connection by Andrew Scheer with voters. I think they definitely kept it as far as their base was concerned, tried to talk about issues that the people in areas that traditionally vote for the Conservatives cared about. But I think part of the problem here is they didn't really make a dent in Ontario. You know, we still see the Liberals with a large lead in Ontario, not a lot of seats changing hands to the Conservatives. We knew they were going to do better in the Maritimes because the Liberals won every seat in 2015. But the place where you need to get those votes, and I think this is something that Stephen Harper learned the hard way in 2004, is in Ontario. And if you don't make a dent in Ontario, it's very difficult to try to make the case that you are going to be winning the election. I think there's a difficulty there. And the way in which you can solve it is by trying to establish an emotional connection with voters now that you're the leader of the opposition in a minority parliament. It was difficult to do this before. They only had a few months to get ready for the election after he became leader. But now they have a chance to maybe address a little bit more of the, you know, kitchen table issues, try to steer clear from the debates about social conservatism, abortion, same-sex marriage, and really try to talk to Canadians about how the situation has unfolded over the next, 1 or 2 years, and then try to topple the government if it's the right thing to do, and then try to win again. But I think, part of the situation from this campaign is, there was a lot of this of difficulty for the Conservatives to try to establish that emotional connection with voters. I think they tried to do it on the issue of leadership and on the issue of ethics. But it's very difficult to run a campaign for 40 days when you're talking about ethics all the time and the numbers don't move. There were a couple of Hail Marys in the final weekend. The threat that the GST was going to raise under the Liberals, which didn't really catch fire when it came to how most Canadians felt. So there's definitely lessons to be learned from this campaign and try to do things differently if the next election happens within the next couple of years.
Now, Jagmeet Singh, the NDP leader, was the unanimous choice for best campaigner. He was getting plaudits from people on the right, the left, and center. But the Jagmeet juggernaut hit a roadblock on election day. The NDP actually lost seats. Now, they are the most closely aligned to the Liberals and could support the Liberals on a number of bills going forward. But this is a weakened NDP. They only won one seat in Quebec, for instance. and they lost seats elsewhere in the country. People weren't expecting much from Jagmeet Singh, but he did surprise people, especially in the debates. He had nothing to lose, except he did in the end lose seats.
Well, I think part of the situation when it comes to the assessment of the NDP campaign is that everybody thought it was going to be very, very bad. I mean, there were expectations in the first week of the campaign that the Greens would actually finish ahead of the NDP in the national vote. That didn't materialize, of course, but I think when you start the campaign with such low expectations, anything that happens is a blessing. And to me, this really recalls the first campaign under Jack Layton, when he was consistently seen as the best leader when it came to favorable ratings. People approved of what he was doing. He was seen as a much more casual leader, somebody you wanted to have a beer with, maybe. And, you know, Jagmeet Singh was able to succeed in this situation, but definitely not when it came to seats. So it's, in essence, it's very similar to the first electoral campaign that Jack Layton ran. You know, people liked him more than Paul Martin. They liked him more than Stephen Harper. But he didn't get the votes until the 2011 election to actually become leader of the official opposition. So it's a complex matter. If we hadn't had the NDP as low as it was before the campaign began, we would be having very extensive conversations about the future of Jagmeet Singh as leader. But because he started with such low expectations, now we see it as something that worked very well. Now, that being said, the next election is going to be crucial. He needs to be better as far as the voting percentage and the seats, which is what Jack Layton did in every election that he led the party on. If he fails to do that in the next election, then the questions that we were having at the start of the campaign about his leadership and whether it is feasible will definitely come back.
Now, the NDP, of course, had just one seat in Quebec on election day. The Bloc Québécois, however, won 32 seats. That means Quebec nationalism is back on the federal stage. At the same time, another story out of Quebec was Maxime Bernier, leader of the People's Party, a complete bust. He lost the only seat the party held, his own seat. There is some evidence that the People's Party in some ridings and a handful of ridings took away enough votes from conservatives, presumed conservative votes, and those votes may have gone to the Liberals and allowed Liberals to win by splitting that right-wing vote. So talk about those two storylines, the rise of the Bloc Québécois and the fall of the People's Party of Canada.
Well, what was fascinating about the Bloc is that the discussion about sovereignty definitely took a backseat. I think there was an effort from the leader of the Bloc to try to talk about specific issues that matter to Quebec, try to connect in a way that wasn't really related to sovereignty, and essentially saying to voters, we know you're not happy with Trudeau or with Scheer or with Jagmeet Singh. Here's an option for you that will be in your best interest. So in a way, it was kind of like a campaign in Europe when you have those regional parties that tend to do well in specific elections. And I'm thinking about Spain, for instance. It was almost like a Basque Nationalist Party campaign. You know, we don't necessarily seek separation right now, but we do believe that you should have a voice that speaks to you in the nation's capital. And I thought it was a good way to connect. The fact that they came very close to the Liberals in the voting number certainly suggests that they connected. They got a lot of votes from the NDP, which were left since the Layton days. But it's not a situation where you have the Bloc at the same level that it enjoyed in the late 90s, in the early 2000s under Gilles Duceppe. So they definitely did better than in the last election. But Quebecers tend to be that way. You know, we saw the rise of the Action Démocratique du Québec back in 2007, and now the party has disappeared. So it really remains to be seen what is going to happen here and what type of strategies the Liberals have in place in order to try to regain those votes and make sure that they go not to the Bloc in the next election. Now, as far as Maxime Bernier is concerned, the party was definitely obsessed with the idea of running a nationwide campaign. It didn't really work the way they expected. They only get to a percent of the vote when it comes to all of the ballots that are counted. And it definitely makes it a little bit difficult to try to find a place for those voters. Will they go to the Conservatives? Will they just decide to stay home? Will there be a new movement that is going to be inspired by libertarian views? Or is this going to be something that is just going to disappear? But, you know, the fact that they tried to campaign, the fact that he got into these televised debates made it certainly suggested that they were going to do a little bit better than they did, and that the results on election night are certainly disappointing for everybody who threw their hand into the ring and finished in last place in most rankings.
And then finally, bring it back to the West Coast. Elizabeth May, the Green Party leader, who had two seats before the election, her own seat and Paul Manley's seat in Nanaimo, increased it, had a win in New Brunswick, but only has three seats. When the projections back in the summer, when there was a lot of optimism around the Green Party, was that they could even reach double digits. They didn't reach double digits, and Elizabeth May is already saying that while she may be around as leader if an election is called in the next couple of years, that she doesn't foresee herself leading the party into the next scheduled election in 2023. A big disappointment for the Greens in many ways, because this was a campaign where climate change was a top issue, and the Greens are the party that has wrapped itself in the cloak of climate change, saying it is the party of climate change solution ideas, yet they didn't deliver on election day.
No, I think it was probably the largest disappointment, aside from what happened with the Conservatives in that sense. You had a summer that was definitely full of news related to climate change. The campaign happens at the same time as Greta Thunberg is crossing the Atlantic. You had plenty of opportunities to try to connect on that issue, and it just didn't materialize for them. I think there was also a difficulty there with the notion of running a nationwide campaign, similar to what happened with the People's Party. But in this case, even weirder in the sense that you had Elizabeth May attending rallies for Jody Wilson-Raybould in Vancouver Granville when they actually had a Green candidate who was running in that riding. So maybe this is a reminder that they should go back to the way in which campaigns used to be done before for the Greens, and maybe focus on 5-10 seats that you can gain and try to forget about everything else. Trying to be a nationwide party hasn't really worked very well for them. And I know they get a seat in the Maritimes this time around. The one that they really wanted was the Halifax one with Joanne Roberts, and it didn't really materialize. So it's an interesting dilemma, because now we have two openings, so to speak, for Green parties, one in British Columbia and one at the federal level. And it remains to be seen who's going to be able to take those seats. And ultimately, what happens if the Green Party leader wants to run in the same way that Jagmeet Singh did? Are we going to see a situation where there's a by-election or something of that nature that is going to enable the new Green Party leader to be there? But this is definitely disappointing, particularly because of such high expectations that we had. And it's actually ironic that we started this campaign with the NDP really, really down on itself and nothing's going to happen, and the Greens expecting big gains, and the results at the end of the campaign are very different for each one of those parties.
Well, thank you again to Mario Canseco of Research Co. for talking about the federal election. For more information on Research Co. and its polls, go to researchco.ca.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau. No! Sunny ways, my friends, sunny ways.
We chose instead to move forward with a progressive government. Strong BCers to be part of a progressive government. With a progressive government, or do you pick a progressive opposition? Le choix d'un parti progressiste qui veut former un gouvernement. But you know, we talk about that progressive government an awful lot. What exactly is a progressive government? What did the progressive government do? Well, I'll tell you what's in our progressive government platform. A progressive government, so our progressive government is promising, a progressive government recognizes these are the things that a progressive government does. A progressive government looks at these are the kinds of things that a progressive government does. And finally, a progressive government. These are the things that a progressive government does. But we need to be that progressive government. Des progressistes d'un bout à l'autre de ce pays. Progressives from right across the country. Strong progressive government. Merci tout le monde! Thank you!
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a deserving person or group that is making a difference. a virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar, goes this week to BC Hydro crews on call to solve power outages. Yes, it's storm season again around British Columbia, as we saw on October 25th. So, a salute to the men and the women who put themselves in danger to get the lights back on in cities and in small towns across the province. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 27th, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on October 27th in 1810, the United States annexed the former Spanish colony of West Florida? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. PATREON.com/TheBreakerNews. Until next week.